Welcome to the Youth Access Cheating Forum.
That's not the way you want to say it.
Welcome to the Forum on Cheating, hosted by USAC and the CIA Department. And before I actually say some opening remarks, I'm just going to point out everybody that there's a video camera in the back over there. So if you're near the video camera, if you say something really loud, that's going to be recorded and going to be shown on RUTV. So and if you would like, you can come in the front over here. Better for the video camera. All right, my name is Mihir Banot, and I'm the chair of USACS for this year. And over here is Phil Tekas, who is the treasurer of USACS. He'll be the moderator today for the discussion. And over there in the back, we have Andrew, who is the vice chair for USACS. We also have a couple of board members in the audience. I'm basically gonna turn it over to Phil at this point. He's the moderator for this evening, and he's gonna introduce the speakers and what we're gonna be talking about. Okay, if you have any questions, this is a discussion, so please raise your hand and say what you have to say. And please try to be loud and clear, because we don't have a audio feed into the video. So we're just gonna, it's just gonna be recording what it hears. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mihir. My name is Phil. I'm a junior here at Rutgers. And I'll be moderating a discussion this evening. I'd like to welcome everyone for coming, especially the CS computer science faculty administration that are here in the audience. We did give out cheat sheets to the first 20-25 people who came, and we do hope you appreciate those. And later we will have a raffle for the prizes listed on the left. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the panelists, starting with the person to my immediate left. Is Telliver Heath. He's a fourth year graduate student. He's taught CS 110 for 4 years. He has his undergrad degree from Florida State University and is currently working on systems development here at Rutgers. Next to him is Sesh Venugopal. He has experience, he has a PhD from Rutgers University. He's worked at DoubleClick and at Lucent Technologies, and he's been teaching at Rutgers for over a decade, teaching 111, 112, and 336. Next to him is Dr. Richard Martin, who is a professor of computer science here. He has a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. next to him is Michael Moss. He is a fourth-year undergrad here who has experiences with cheating. Not because of, hopefully he hasn't been cheating, but he does have some insights that he'd like to bring. And next to him is Stephen Max. He graduated from Rutgers in 1996 and is going for his PhD in AI and cognitive science. So the way that this forum will work is I'd first open to each speaker to give about 2 or 3 minutes about their concerns, about their issues. After that, I'd like to, I'll ask some pointed questions, and hopefully the discussion can flow from there. And then after that, we will take audience questions and comments. So let's start with Telliver, immediately to my left.
I kind of wish I had chosen a different place to sit now. So I've been teaching CS110, which is the computer science course for people who hate computer science. It's the majority of non-majors. The tests and the homework, of course, are where they're going to, where I'm going to see students cheat the most. And honestly, what I have seen is that they find it very simple to cheat. A lot of them will just sit near each other in tests. It's very crowded rooms. So because they'll cheat, they'll find it very simple to cheat, and the risk when you get caught is maybe a zero on that assignment, maybe a zero on that test, which they figured they were going to get it anyway because they didn't study for it. So it's not a really big punishment. So my first statement is that if the risk of something is very low and you want to stop it, you've got to make the penalty extremely high. So you've just got to make a really big sledgehammer to hurt people when they are caught cheating. And it also needs to happen very quickly. And in that semester, because right now when people are caught cheating, it's like a year later when they finally go to trial and finally everything goes through the loops. And I'll also bring up one more thing, if, you know, just to be controversial on the panel, should we care about cheating? That's, I'll just start there. Why, you know, if people cheat, they're here to learn, and if they want, you know, they're paying us to learn stuff, and if they want to go through and just, you know, figure out how to cheat their way through the college career, it is a useful skill later in life. So maybe it's a legitimate thing, but maybe we shouldn't even care. Maybe this should just be, if students get through and get it done, they get it done. So.
Thank you, Noah.
So, okay, cool.
I'm willing to a fight with the other group very soon, but.
I don't necessarily believe that.
Yeah, I'm going to know this
time. I'll take it.
So I teach computer science 1-4 as the primary thing that I do pretty much, and I'm from 11, 1936. And really, you know, there's two different aspects of cheating. One is the online cheating, I call it, where people cheat on the exam. And the other is the offline kind of cheating, where people cheat on programming assignments, homework. And also, when the exam is given back to them, sometimes they will rewrite their answers and ask them about it. My experience has been that the online cheating is thing relatively more controllable. And I'm sure we'll talk about some other ways of doing that. But the offline cheating, where we give programming assignments and students have a couple of weeks or so to finish it and bring it back, is really more of a problem, at least in the one-fold programming courses. And people have found, you know, every semester they find new ways of doing stuff that we don't anticipate or we have to spend on and stuff like that. We have technology that catches programs that are synchronous, that's what you might know. But there are other ways of getting around this also that we need to look at. So really my main concern, hopefully we'll get some more ideas from you guys also about how we can solve the offline cheating problem.
Okay, thank you. Professor Martin.
So Enron aside, right, am I getting any mic here? Okay. So I was going to say, Enron aside, I would disagree with Caliber that it's a useful skill to achieve. I have taught the operating system course 416 as well as 352, and you know, I have seen quite widespread cheating in some of the courses, and I think that it really degrades the academic integrity of the program and the value of your degrees that you are paying for. Because if employers perceive that the average Rutgers student isn't very good, and a lot of people are graduating without knowing anything, that really degrades your chances of getting good jobs. So you should hope all worry about cheating. And I guess my main concern and what I'm looking for from the audience today is really trying to come up with a system for, you know, handling cheaters in a fair manner that reduces cheating and in some sense is just. Because I think the current system we have set up at the university was developed for a day and age where a university was a lot different. And I think today with, you know, large anonymous classes like we have in operating systems and in internet technology, for example, the courses I teach, that system doesn't operate very effectively. One of the visions I have is trying to create some kind of more what I call two-tier system, where there's another method to deal with cheaters, which is much more expedient, and hopefully gets people not to cheat again. And if they continue to cheat, then, you know, more serious kind of actions are taken. But that's where I hope I can get some feedback from you guys as students as to what you feel is fair on a system like that.
Thank you very much. Mike?
I certainly agree with everything that was said by the previous speakers, especially with what Seth had mentioned as far as how important it is for students to make the professors and the faculty aware of the types of cheating that's going on, especially if it's as frustrating for you guys as it has been for me and for a lot of people. But you know how frustrating it has been for me. But I believe that a lot of the cheating that's going on is blatant, and that a lot can be done simply by setting up an infrastructure and rules that can be implemented to take care of these issues that come up. So hopefully with student input and continued cooperation, a lot of these problems can be solved. And as far as devaluing the degree, I think that's certainly one of the most crucial points with this whole problem, that it certainly devalues the degree from Rutgers. If you have people that have no idea what's going on and they're getting out to the field and they're representing Rutgers, they're representing you with the same degree that all of us are going to have, I think that's definitely a big problem.
Okay, thank you. Steve, and can you please speak up?
Well, this is a start from a personal note. It wasn't until I was at Rutgers as an undergrad for a couple semesters that I realized how rampant cheating was. First couple semesters, I thought everybody was as honest as I was, and I remember the first course I took, 111, they gave a whole speech about cheating and academic integrity, and I really took it to heart, as I thought everybody did. And as I got to know some people, one by one, I found, you know, almost half the class was cheating. And that's really, really, really despicable. I think, as Dr. Martin mentioned, I guess part of it is that things aren't the way they used to be. And I think maybe some professors in the past weren't aware of just how prevalent, I mean, you know, there's always been the understanding that some people cheat, but to have a huge proportion of a class cheat is really astounding. Not only does all that cheating lessen the prestige of the Rutgers degree, but it really hurts the students who are cheating. I remember getting into a conversation with somebody who was astonished that I actually tried to solve the programming problems on my own. He's like, hey, look through the text and other, go to the library and find the program somewhere and just copy it down. And I was like, huh? You know, if a solution to a problem in the real world is so simple, they wouldn't need to hire people to solve it. And it seems like many students don't understand that the things that people are willing to pay employees a lot of money to solve are precisely those things that are difficult to solve. And if you're not forced, at least if some people aren't forced to have to solve these problems on their own, then they're going to be in a really bad situation when they're out there in the real world trying to solve these problems. I guess that's all I can say for right now.
Okay, thank you very much. At this point, I'd like to, we're going to ask a student questions, I guess. And what I'd like to do is basically, anyone who does have a comment, to please speak up on the issue. And hopefully we can do that. I do ask the speakers to limit their comments to, you know, a reasonable amount of time so that we can preserve. I'm not necessarily sure that, based on the responses, that there's a disagreement whether or not cheating is bad for the university, minus Tulliver. So I'd rather not delve into that too much. What I do want to ask the panel is, and if you want to get back into that, that's fine. What I do want to ask the panel, though, is what types of cheating do we see? What are the current methods that you use to prevent it? And what are some of the flaws with that?
Okay, so I have a little list that I'm doing. And these are the things that I have observed or have done from other people. But again, what I want to do is to sort of fill the gaps here. So the online cheating, which happens during the exam, you know, how and when this stuff happens is, of course, people pass papers around sometimes. They speak to each other, answers to questions. They look over at each other's exam papers. And I like the Targum ad that you posted. There's two students and sitting next to each other, one student's holding a magnifying glass and the other person's exam. So that kind of stuff. People bring pre-solved answers to the exams, especially when they're doing exams on blue books. They go outside the class and probably get answers to stuff. They go to the bathroom and so on. I'm not sure if they use PDAs or any, you know, devices like this to actually communicate with their pals, but they probably do. I haven't had any first-hand contact back to the thing. There's a proxy exam taker who typically takes the exam for a friend. And so these are the sort of things that we have seen. And most, I think the most frequent one is when people are talking and passing or talking about and sort of with each other, and that's the thing that we can see a lot of. The kind of setup that encourages this, these kinds of, you know, online cheating practices, what I've noticed is that towards the end of the exam is actually very crucial because we missed out on a lot. There's a whole bunch of people that are handing exams in and so on, and the proctors are busy and all kinds of stuff happens. The other thing that I'm conflicted about is giving open notes exams. I like the idea because there are some classes where I don't want people to memorize everything. But that obviously leaves, you know, creates some holes where people can start cheating. The obvious thing is, of course, students who sit too close to each other, and what I tend to do is to not schedule the exam in the classroom, but get a bigger classroom so I have two open seats between every pair of students, and if I can, leave an empty row. That really cuts down a lot on this kind of stuff. The other thing is, if there's many students asking questions of the proctors and they're all busy, then obviously you can't pay attention to everybody who's doing stuff. And the offline cheating, which I started talking about, which is really a concern, the first thing is in any exam, the student hands the exam and gets it graded back, and then they go back and change the answer, and they come back and say, hey, you know, you never saw this, I need credit back. With the assignments, they will get the solution to previous assignments and then copy from there. Or they work together in writing code, or they vendor coders, you know. Now some of these things can be caught, and we have, you know, programs that can compare if two programs are similar and stuff like that. But if a student gets the code from some other source that's not another student in the class, then that creates a problem, and it's hard to find. Now we can do, and I'm not going to talk about solutions right now. I think let me keep going. The setup that encourages this kind of cheating, with the exam, it really helped, or the encouragement is offered by TAs not actually describing the thing that they're marking off. They'll just do -2 or whatever, and then that leaves a big hole. With the assignments, recycling programming assignments too soon is an obvious thing. They get the previous year's answer from your friends. And also, if you don't check if two programs are similar, you're losing a whole bunch of people who are cheating. So you have to do that. That's pretty much.
Professor Martin, what do you use now to limit, let's say, offline cheating initially in your exam?
You mean online or offline?
Offline.
On the assignments.
What do you do now to prevent offline cheating during exams, you know, somewhere about there?
Well, okay. I understand the online being during the exams and offline being assignments and
perpetuation.
Oh, so yeah, right.
We switched terms on this. I apologize.
Do you mean programming assignments in general? Or?
No, I mean the exam.
So I have a little laundry list of things I do to try to prevent this online cheating or cheating during exams. First thing is I don't allow any electronic devices. That just cuts out on people doing instant messaging and other kinds of things like that. It means we have to make the exams trackable to do without that, so it places a little bit more of a burden on us. But I think it's a reasonable thing. As Seth mentioned, I try to get a room large enough where I can make everyone sit at least one seat apart. In addition to that, I try to make multiple versions of the exam. So fortunately, for the kind of courses I teach, there's a lot of numerical kind of problems you can do and just changing the numbers around so that the answers are different. You can know fundamentally the question is the same. Works very well. During the end of the exam, in this chaotic kind of situation that Sasha described, I usually try to make everyone sit down, and I tell the students to pass their exam to the end of the row and not get up, otherwise I won't accept it. So that way that there's not a lot of people moving around as far as allowing open note exams, again, I like this idea of not making the students memorize everything, but I'm a little bit conflicted about letting students have sort of anything, so I take a compromise position, let them have a cheat sheet, and in order to kind of prevent, you know, gross misuse of the cheat sheets, I make the students turn in the cheat sheet. So that way we know that, you know, if there's something fishy going on, we can look at the cheat sheets and see, you know, what they actually use them for. So I found that's also fairly effective. And then there's the usual kind of things of, you know, not reusing the same exam year after year and trying to change at least some large subset of the exam every year so that you can't do things like bring a completed copy of the exam.
Hey, wait, one thing that I pull off on, because the scale of the exams that I give is a little bit different than the scale of exams other people give. So I have like 270 people in one room, and I'm giving the exam to everybody at once. And so one of the tactics that I've attempted to use, because, you know, I don't have the complete luxury of making sure people sit every other, like two seats apart with empty rows, because there are really not that many big rooms at Rutgers. So what I'll usually do is after everyone gets sat down, I'll walk through and randomly move people around the room.
Yeah.
So that tries to break up the groups that come together. And if you're sitting near a stranger, even though, you know, it's a little bit less likely you're going to, hey buddy, tell me the answer, than you are with a friend. So, you know, even though probably some of you are laughing, so it probably does happen, but at the same time, you know, it tries to break up that. And also, you can usually tell which people come in, because as you get closer to them, they get very quiet. And then, okay, you're separated, so it looks suspicious.
So getting at this, one thing I make students do, on, at least in the final exams I've done, is check IDs during the exam. TA going on, just make sure that the person actually taking the exam matches the ID. And finally, write their seat number on the exam. So all the large lecture halls have the seats numbered, and we found that's also effective in deterring people from cheating, because we can correlate to see if two exams were something suspicious, were these people sitting next to each other. So,
Stephen, now given that UTA for different professors, have you found that professors have used a lot of these methods? Do they differ across the board?
Well, what I've seen is TAing for the same professors over a few times, and it seems like things have been getting worse, and different professors I've TAed for have been changing their policies. For example, Professor McCarty and I came up with one solution I haven't heard yet, which actually works for anybody who's on the borderline. You know, somebody's committed to cheating and can't stop them, but we have everybody sign a academic integrity policy. I think there's something magic about signing in ink your name on something. I think some people might have thought about cheating, are a little hesitant now that they've actually signed their name to something. They can't, you know, say, "Well, I didn't know." I think the harder you make it and the scarier you make it for people to cheat, the more likely they won't even attempt it. And hopefully we won't have to, things will be going well and we won't have to worry about trying to catch people cheating. We'll be preventing them from cheating in the first place.
I'm sticking with the exam types of cheating. Are the punishments that exist now, are they good? Are they bad? And are they tough enough?
I think the punishments that are on the books are tough enough. The problem is it's actually following through and enforcing them. And I've personal experience with this. In Professor McCarty's class, it takes quite a bit of energy and determination and fortitude to just stick with it. I mean, it took a very long time, upwards of a year to finally see this through. I know when people hear that somebody was busted on cheating and put on probation or kicked out of the university, it stops a lot of people from even thinking about cheating. So we need to, I don't think we need different rules, I think we need to have them enforced more rigorously.
We brand students on this. A wall of shame would probably do wonders. It's probably completely illegal.
So this gets at the theme I was trying to get at earlier, which is it takes, you know, as you mentioned, it takes, you know, upwards of a year to go through the entire process that's on the books when somebody actually cheats. And this level of effort for the amount of cheating that's happening is just, it's way too high. It's not really sustainable if 30% of the class is cheating to actually go through and with this kind of process. Okay, it was developed when the university was a lot smaller, when professors actually knew students in that kind of an era. So one of the things that I would propose is that you know, we as a department kind of have some kind of policy where if you get caught cheating the first time, you get zero on whatever work you did, plus some kind of a penalty in the class, a grading penalty. So maybe it's negative points on whatever the thing was you were doing to scale the kind of, what the to scale how
bad the cheating was, okay? Maybe it's dropping by a grade, okay? But some kind of academic penalty. And you also get a little write-up and put on this list of people who cheat. The next time you cheat, okay, and that's your sort of one semi-freebie cheat. Okay? Not a freebie, but you know, a little sting for cheating. Okay? And the second time you cheat, that's taken much more seriously, and we actually will push through the entire process. You getting it on your academic transcript and your record, possibly getting put on probation, and possibly getting expelled from the university. Because not only have you cheated, you know, once, you've also, you know you've cheated twice, and maybe across multiple courses. And so this is the kind of style of system I'd like to see in use, because it allows us to, I think, scale to a number where we can deal with the kind of cheating that's happening, and at the same time be, you know, reasonable in our approach. So we can be reasonable in the sense that we realize that a lot of this cheating is kind of for things that maybe aren't so serious and so bad, as long as you don't keep doing it, that's okay. Not that it's okay, but as long as you've learned your lesson, you don't keep doing it, you won't get something happen to you like thrown out of university, because it seems like if you do something like look over the shoulder on somebody's exam, okay, is getting thrown out of university too harsh? Well, I'm seeing some no's there. Well, right, so there's a school philosophy that says that if you're caught looking over the shoulder of your buddy on the exam, you're probably doing lots of other cheating too, so maybe you should get thrown out. But yeah, I think having some other kind of system where you are academically penalized first, and then having some kind of harsher punishment second would be more reasonable than we have now.
I have a question for Mike, and I was talking to before, but I'm curious to know from you guys, and hopefully Mike can start talking about this from the student point of view, since there's such a big outcry here. I mean, clearly, you know, cheating in the absolute sense is not good. But as a student, how do you get hurt? I mean, what is the thing that you really want to correct? You know, is there a relative sense here of, you know, because somebody else cheats, you're actually getting penalized somehow?
And also,
you know, are you more concerned about that than, you know, knowing whether this cheater has been given some jail term or some stuff, you know? So
I think the ultimate goal is really to lessen the amount of cheating overall, because in general, from what you say, what would we want to see done with the cheaters and why? Well, first of all, if you treat the cheaters like they should be, and they get penalized in some way or get expelled, then it's going to be a deterrent, and then there's going to be less cheating. How I think it affects us, it was mentioned before that, and I think the scariest thing is that, if, for instance, in my operating systems class, my professor's right there, there's people that can't write a for loop, and that's a 400-level class. They've been here for 4 years, and they cannot write a for loop. And then they're going to go, and they're going to get hired, and they represent Rutgers University, and we look terrible at that point. And professors look just as bad. And it all goes down from there. And I think that's one way that it certainly affects us. Another way is right in within the class, I think it destroys the grading system. I think, I don't know how much, you know, I haven't looked at numbers, I have no idea what it could be, but the assumption is that when you have as many people cheating as there are, the higher level students and in that higher realm get hurt, and because all of a sudden the grade, the level is going higher and higher. So it hurts grades. And also I think for me personally, it's very frustrating to be taking an exam and walking out of the classroom and seeing 30 people cheating on the exams.
So did you turn any of them in?
No.
Sure.
I don't think as a student, first of all, I think the backlash publicly turning someone in for a student is not worth it.
Well, yeah, to be honest though, come on, we're in computer science, we don't start off at the coolest level.
It's not. Right. Yeah, completely agree, but for some of these people, I think you turn someone in for two, you gotta worry about them following you home and doing something like that. And there's people that would probably do that.